Fan Morning Show. Me on the aux cord, Eilish Forfar, Blake Murphy, and JD Bunkus. It's the last day of the week. The Bills are back, baby! Woo! Bing Bills!
Not bad. Bing Buffalo is the way I would have gone, though.
But that's too many symbols. Syllables. Symbols.
Symbols. It is too many symbols.
Ding, symbols. Ding.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
No, so,
anyway.
Also, good vibes yesterday. Gambling was pretty friendly to me. Didn't hit. Eilish, I felt sick for you. Because that Bills game goes under and the Bills win, and all I can think is, of course, this is the way it was always going to go.
5 for 6.
Yeah.
No.
No.
I was four for six.
Oh, because you were on Cowboys,
double
too.
Favorites, right. Double unders was the
triples
pay the rent.
But that first game?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I was like, that's a great way to start your day if you lose both bets, but my boys came through, those Bears.
But isn't that why gambling is great?
Oh, yeah.
We're all watching that Bears-Lions game going, what a game, right down to the wire with the betting. Here
and
I am.
And we were all like, because we had Cabby on and we bet the under. And,
yeah,
and
our team bet was the under. That was the official show, the morning show bet.
That was the first ever Sportsnet bets like debut, too, the new account.
Because
then he went on Tim and Friends later and announced it. So
we were first.
Yeah, I got to see Cabby twice yesterday.
Listen, you know what it is. We do the content, the rest of the world follows. That's the way it goes. It is what it is.
I'll just say, I got asked about embarrassing brother situations on Tim and Friends yesterday, too.
Which
we never got. We did never get to it yesterday.
Yeah,
but
we tease it multiple times. You know why we didn't get to it? I was disappointed with the texters and the DMers. I got some really nice DMs yesterday about the show, which was kind.
Yeah.
Thank you to those people. I always am reluctant to share them with the two of you because it makes me feel like I'm the dad of the show when I text you guys DMs.
Also, I'm not going to believe you.
Yeah, I know. Blake is very always suspect of whenever I send him DMs, as though I have the time to be like orchestrating fake DMs for myself. It's really annoying. So,
hey bud, can you send me this DM so I can send it to Blake and Ailey?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot from you. Whatever. Your brain is just a completely different brain. I thought that I was the weird one. I've always thought, hey, I was a bit of a weird guy. Then I started hanging out with Blake on the regular. I was like, I'm totally fine. I feel good about me.
Well,
and
I feel great about myself.
That's what I mean. It's good. I'm always thankful that I'm not overthinking things to the degree Blake is, as an overthinker. So let's just start with this. Let's put it this way. Let's frame it this way. What'd you learn in the NFL yesterday?
The Bills are back.
Okay.
They're contenders once again. Yeah. Everything we had felt and thought doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They waxed the Saints.
It was
confident enough that I was ready to get to bed a little bit early there last night, and that doesn't happen much. But Josh Allen, Diggs, Knox, they showed up. The defense looked good. It's just nice to start my weekend with a win.
It's nice to, if you're the Bills also, to go from playing Jonathan Taylor to playing a team on their third string running back who can't even get 2 yards per carry and doesn't look like he has much pop at all.
You know what's weird with the Bills is I am actually a believer in this analytics principle. The idea that the best teams blow out the bad teams. That consistent.
It's more predictive than coin flip games.
Exactly.
Land by a field goal.
I'm more about sample than I am about one-offs with those kinds of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is one that is tried, tested, and true across all of sports, that is what the best teams do. They beat the living, you know what, out of the bad teams. And yet here we have this Bills team that's kind of the flies in the face of the statistic where they play bad teams, they kick the crap out of them. I look at them and go, are they legit? And now I didn't feel like I learned anything yesterday. I thought, yeah, you know what? This is what the Bills do.
Mm-hmm.
Beat somebody good other than the Chiefs team that was reeling at the time. That win is legit, but it's less legit.
It's less legit when you look at what they've done since.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's their only legit win.
Yes.
But
everything else is real sus.
So the Bills are up 24-0 at one point, and I don't think that they played stellar at any point of the game, but the fact that the Saints just sucked so bad, that is why the Bills looked so good. I'm not leaving last night being like, they're fixed, everything's good, but it is nice that they finally capitalized on a team that was really crappy.
And like, this is not only a 24-0 lead at one point, and thank you sneaking the Matt Breida touchdown prop across for a garbage time touchdown was really nice for me. Oh. It pushed me to positive for the day.
That's nice.
Which was nice. But this is not only a 24-0 lead. It's a 24-0 lead that very easily could have been way bigger. Because Josh Allen had a bad interception, and then he had a red zone interception. I know his hand got clipped as he threw it, so it's maybe not as bad as the result looked. But also, that was a possession where he took way too much time in the pocket with open reads. That could have been another 7 points right before the break.
Yeah.
Or at least three. So this is, it was not only 31-6 and at one point 24-0 if we want to siphon off the relevant parts of the game. It was very close to being even worse.
I wasn't overly blown away or impressed by the Bills until the second half and once the game was actually put away. It really did feel like all they needed to do was cross that 10-point threshold and make it a bigger lead than the 10-0. And then once that happened,
make Simeon start throwing.
Right. And then once that happened, it was done. And man, it was so weird. I know that Taysom Hill had this toe injury or foot injury that he was only supposed to be used in emergency situations, but there were multiple times where the Saints early needed to have these short yardage conversions. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, Taysom Hill and his $40 million are about to trot out here, right? No, he's just on the bench.
Collecting. The ghost of Ty Montgomery coming in to try to punch him through. And
I can't. I think Taysom Hill has maybe the best life in the history of professional sports.
Like, so just it's paid. It's the old. I mean, this is actually the like entire basis for the show Blue Mountain State, if you've ever watched it. But like the idea that Matt Leinart had the best career because like you're very well paid and you're very famous and you get to be a backup quarterback for the most part. That's Taysom Hill's living it.
So I don't know. I'm not sure I learned anything about the Bills. I thought I learned that Dawson Knox playing him in fantasy wasn't very fun this week.
Big Knox.
He was really great to start the season, and then so he's back, maybe?
Well, it's one of those things where when the Bills are rolling, it feels like they have so many weapons, and when they're not,
it's like, who do you throw the ball to?
Exactly. And so this is something I kind of want to talk to Charles Davis about at 7 o'clock, is just simply where he's at, where a guy who actually has played football and is in it every single day, what he thinks about the Bills' offensive pieces. Because the rushing attack looked actually halfway decent for moments last night. But again, it was against a Saints team that was broken and for the most part knew that, one, they were on the field way too long, but two, that even if they got off the field, that their offense wasn't going to do anything. So I don't think we learned anything about them.
And, like, is it a positive for your defense, for your rushing offense, if suddenly Matt Breida's a factor? Like, I know he's played okay the last 2 weeks, but I don't think that's a big vote of confidence in Devin Singletary.
Last thing I'll say on the Bills before we move on is I think the best thing I'm taking from it is they got a dominant win. They got a lot of points. The momentum hopefully builds to when they play the Patriots on Monday and then the Bucks and then the Patriots in another 2 weeks. I think if they lost last night, it's over. Like, I don't even know statistically if it would be over, but mentally and emotionally for those players and the fan base, it's a huge mountain to climb knowing that you have about four big games in the next 5 weeks.
And a long week to prep for the Pats now.
That's huge.
So I'll take it.
They have the long week to prep for the Pats. They're still in it. They don't have some kind of disaster. It would have been a disaster to lose that Saints team.
Oh, yeah. But I wouldn't have put it past them. I was a little nervous.
So they get credit for that win, and it's big for them because they couldn't have had it. It's a disaster if they don't do it. So, yes, you took care of business. Absolutely. Credit for that. I'm just saying, if the question is, what did we learn? I'm really not sure that we learned anything about the Bills. That wasn't something where I went, oh, the Bills did a different thing or they unlocked something. It was just very much boilerplate Bills versus a bad team this season. The team, Blake, do you have a different one?
Nope. My biggest concern with the Bills remains the rushing defense, and I'm not going to change my opinion on them against Tony Jones Jr.
So what did you learn yesterday?
I mean, I learned I was probably letting myself get too in on the Cowboys.
Yeah.
I know that game was very weird, and the overtime especially swung on.
Oh my God, that was hilarious.
Swung on some bizarre calls, and
that poor kicker had to kick like 15 times in the span of 1 minute.
I loved it.
Now, here's the thing I would tell Cowboys fans, and I tell Raptors fans this too when they get upset with the officiating, is don't leave a game in a position where a call or two from the officials, or three or four in this case, can swing it.
What's
poor
Brown's
poor
first
Anthony
name?
Brown. Yeah, Anthony? That's what I was trying to pull from my brain.
Boy, Anthony Brown. That's about as
more hated in Dallas than Belts today, the day after Thanksgiving.
Belts? Oh,
yeah. I got to tell you though, there is something. Pro sports, I rarely feel bad for the athletes in the game, right? Even when someone gets dunked on. Oh, so embarrassing. Utah Watanabe got dunked on. I go, that's just part of, I actually think it's more embarrassing if you don't try to play defense.
Yeah, the business decision of getting out of the way.
Yeah, I think that's more embarrassing, right? Just like Teddy Bridgewater a week ago, where he doesn't even try to make a tackle line. I know Teddy had all the injuries and blah, 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 blah. But to just watch a guy run by you and not even try to push in the NFL, I always think that stuff is lame. But I rarely feel bad for an athlete who's even having an off night. I go, yeah, that's what the money's for. And guess what? You're paid to perform and people are going to criticize you and you're paid not small amounts of money. You're paid exorbitant amounts of money. Mm-hmm. So it takes a lot for me to feel bad for someone. At one point, I felt like I was Anthony Brown's cousin or something, where I went, hey, man, come on, guys.
Pass interference penalties.
I know. It was just, and the last one, he just looked so exacerbated.
Like he knew.
Yeah.
He's like, of course I'm going to get called for that. And
I thought there was also one in an end zone. There was an end zone throw where he's playing DB, and I thought he was going to get rung up on it, and it was close, and he did the whole put his hands up like he was ready for it, and I went, don't do it to him. It's in the end zone. Come on, please, leave Anthony Brown alone. And, yeah, he was quite bad. But here's what I – when you say what I learned about them is that I shouldn't have been so in on them. Cowboys fans hate this, but I'm doing it anyways. I bought a ton of Cowboys stock at the beginning of the season. I thought, boy, this team looks really good.
They started 6-1.
Yeah.
And they kept winning against the spread. They were good betting.
Let me get the caveats out of the way. One is short week, and the defense had to do so much against the Chiefs that when they had some lapses in that game, I went, oh, okay. I will say Leighton Vander Esch, I don't know what happened from year one to now. Maybe part of it is that they have Micah Parsons, and I compare him to that. And I look at...
What a monster.
His nickname is Wolf Hunter, and I keep going, hey, how about how about you just make a tackle? How about you just actually don't buckled?
Wolf Tackler.
Wolf Hunter. Yeah. How about you make a good read on defense every once in a while to warrant that nickname? Anyways, their defense, I'm kind of going, I believe that defense is pretty good. The secondary had a rough night. DeSean Jackson, I guess, for some, is still doing his DeSean Jackson thing. So the defense, I'm excusing. I know the natural inclination would be, well, they're missing their top two receivers, so what do you expect? And Zeke was banged up, so with the offense and the offensive line, this has its trials and tribulations. This is just another game, though, where Dak makes a couple really nice throws at the end, but overall, I'm left with a feeling of wanting, and this is just where I've sort of always been at with the guy. He's a big-time, I-have-the-stats quarterback. Oh, look at all Dak's stats. Dak's stats are so impressive. Dak's stats. I never really get the sense that he's elevating the team. And weirdly, is he the slowest quarterback or the worst rushing quarterback in the NFL? I feel like every time the pocket collapses and he has to make a play with his legs, it never happens. I can't. What's his total rushing yards on the season? Negative 100? Like, he never, ever seems to pull that off. And I'm not a Dak Prescott guy. I think Dak Prescott, good in good situations, definitely a top 12-ish quarterback, but we keep kind of wanting him to be elite because he's the face of the Dallas Cowboys and he has those numbers and all those different things. And yet I never feel it when I'm watching him. And I didn't feel it again in that game, even though he did leave his team down the field and made that beautiful throw to Schultz at the end.
27 for 94, by the way, rushing.
Yeah. I'm just joking, but yeah, I know, it's just, but yeah, even still, that's nothing for a quarterback. Like Tom Brady looks better when he's running the football right now.
I don't know.
Looks great. You see Tom Brady juking.
He's just so funny when he runs.
He is the big narrative of Tom Brady right now is that he runs better now than he used to. If I'm going to do a thing I learned, it's like, don't bet on the Detroit Lions. Stop. Just, you know.
I felt for you for a little bit. I was excited.
No, this is like JD talks about he never feels bad for professional athletes.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad for professional degenerates?
Here's the thing. I bet the under in this game separately. Mm-hmm. I had a touchdown prop with Hawkinson. So it was really a gravy. It would have been a 3-for-3 instead of a 2-for-3. So I really wasn't that upset that the Lions lost. I just felt for their fans in that moment.
It's
where,
just awful.
But it's just the ways that they lose and how embarrassing it is. And now even, like, we've got Dan Campbell at the podium right now. And this guy is just someone who, he's losing his grip. Every week,
his arms are flailing. He looks like he's sweating buckets.
Yeah, but he's not watching tape after. Like, he looks like he's just going right to the hotel room to watch Sons of Anarchy. And he's like, you know what? This isn't it for me.
For the end of that, for the
I feel for him.
They get it right. They have this chance, and you go. It's 3rd and 9, It was a long 9. 3rd and 9. Just get off the field. And he and his defensive coordinator are hammering away at their second timeout. Just utter incompetence. Their defense is completely discombobulated. And they actually get to stop. That's the worst part, is that the Bears throw this little check down play that gets them 4, 5, 6 yards. But it's a stop. You even got the stop with everything that happened. And then, of course, they pick up the 3rd down. They run the clock down. They kick the field goal. They win the game. And I said it. That's the Lions fan Super Bowl. You all sit around on Thanksgiving. And I just picture being a Lions fan in the States. And at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, right as you're in the middle of your Thanksgiving celebration, you all have to talk about why you're Lions fans all day. You know, there's not even.
Like, why do we do this to ourselves?
I tweeted. I said, just fold the Lions and free them. You know, free the Lions fans from this misery. Because it's just bad. It's so, so bad. I do this thing called the Hopeless Index or the Hopeless Rankings every year. I call it the index because of Blake's Misery Index. But no, I do the Hopeless Franchise Rankings every year.
Mm-hmm. They must
and
be at the top.
They always are. There's just never a time where I don't put the Lions at the top of the Hopeless Franchise Rankings. And even this year, they're going to end up with the #1 overall pick. And what's the confidence level you have that the Lions are going to draft somebody and turn around? It's not going to happen. They suck. They're the Lions.
Oh, 10-1.
Yeah.
Are they going to win a game, do you think?
I hope not, because I think it's funny. Yeah. I think that it's funny now that you're
well
just so bad. You just lean into being the team that twice is going to go a season without winning a game. Unbelievable. The opposite of the Lions, the franchise that's never been embarrassed.
Never.
Not once. The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Elite.
No just, blemishes.
They win every year.
Win every year, just never embarrass their fans. Always looking good, always looking clean. They're back tonight. It's the quarter mark. Simply put,
wow.
What was the story of the first quarter to you guys? And then we'll do what you hope what the story of the second quarter is.
Okay, the story of the first quarter. I feel like I'm going to take it from you guys because there's not too many. But Jack Campbell emerging as not only good, mm-hmm. but reliable, dependent, elite. He's even in the Olympic conversation now. And he helped the Leafs so tremendously to get to where they are. Without him playing as he did, I would be frightened to know what their record would be. He, for me, is the story of the first quarter.
This is semi-related, but for me, it's the ability to string wins together consistently when the offense isn't clicking at a high level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of that's the defensive play. Some of that is Jack Campbell's play. Some of that is, you know, you dominate possession enough that there's just not a lot of opportunity. Like they're getting outshot by other teams in terms of shooting percentage, but you insulate yourself from that when you're tilting play and you're dominating possession to the degree that you are. So, you know, obviously, like we were talking about with the Bills, if you're blowing all these teams out, you'd feel more confident about it. You'd feel, you know, be more projectable and things like that. But for this team in particular, given how the last couple of years have gone, to consistently be winning these lower event games is, it's encouraging.
So I think that those two things are tied together. And Jack gets another bump just because Mrazek hasn't been healthy. And we came into the season going, well, you really need to make sure that Jack's workload isn't very high. And we'll get to that when we talk about Wohl's start tonight, the decision to start him. But it was, you really got to be careful with Jack. Don't don't mess with Jack too much. Make sure that he's in a spot. And one of the good things about Jack is that he is going to be in a timeshare like a modern day goaltender, but he will love it because he's such a nice guy and he's already been a backup and he's got the constitution for it and blah, 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 blah. And I feel as though you're right. This first quarter, he has, I don't want to say shattered because that sounds overly dramatic, but he has really changed some of the perception around him in terms of, hey, not only are you doing it against American competition, you're doing it on that consistent night-in-night basis. Blake's the stringing the wins together. It's this guy. There isn't the let-ups. There haven't been the bad goals. And I know that this fan base has historically been quite bad, and hockey fans in general are pretty bad at trying to do this whole evaluation of what's a good goal versus what's a bad goal. But the Jack Campbell's letting in so few goals in general that you can't really have any discussion about what the bad goals are, because there's a lot of nights there's no goals.
Leads the league in save percentage, goals against average, goals saved above average. And then even if the book on Jack Campbell is he can't play enough, he leads the league in games played.
And we talked about this earlier in the week. I'm not sure if the stat still holds, but he has the best save percentage since the beginning of last season.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that,
it's only gone up since then. So I'd imagine it's the same.
Yeah. That to me is a really important stat too, because last season was good.
Now we're talking sample.
Now we're talking, now we're seeing more of a starting role for him where he didn't have that before. And he's doing all this in a year where there's a contract looming, and for someone to be able to play at that consistent level with that added pressure, because it can go two ways. If you're a goaltender, you see that, hey, I'm playing for some big money, I got to keep it together and be consistent. Or there's that added pressure that if I mess up here, I might not hit my payday, and you know, maybe you're a little bit too tight. But he's honestly been incredible.
So that's why I think that his case is especially strong for a story of the first quarter, because for a lot of people, I think they would have thought, hey, what could Jack Campbell's contract even be at the end of this year? Hey, you know what? If they don't end up with Jack Campbell, you sign Mrazek and you can go out into the market and you can just grab another kind of Jack Campbell-ish contract or Jack Campbell-ish player. And now his importance to the team is feeling greater. It's becoming bigger. That's why I'm going to try to tie all of these things in together with a bit of a cheat, but I think that the story of the first quarter is Kyle Dubas. Dubas rolled this thing back, and he was criticized all offseason for it. I was among the criticism, or the criticizers, or the critics. I just don't have three tries. I didn't strike out.
I was just trying to help.
I know. I'm just saying I strike two, and I gripped up.
Yeah, I'm trying to pinch hit. It's 0-2. Get this guy out of here. Yeah. I don't like the way this plate appearance is going.
It wasn't a good start to the plate appearance, I won't lie. The first hack was very Justin Smoke when he first arrived at the Blue Jays. It was just, hey, anything off the plate, and don't worry, I'm going to wave over the top of it. Obviously, everything is decided in the playoffs. So if you're getting mad listening to this right now, just relax. I'm just saying that the first quarter of the season has been a good one for Kyle Dubas. Mitch Marner is starting to look like the guy that makes $11 million. Mm. And if you think he's overpaid like I do, sure. But when he's playing the way that he's played lately, you're talking about $1 million difference rather than the $2-plus million difference that we've seen in the past. Yep. William Nylander had a great start to the season. Cooled down since then, but a really great start and helped them find their footing. Tavares has looked more like himself. Kerfoot, someone who was in a trade.
You're right. Kerfoot needs a bit more respect.
Kerfoot, who was in a unbelievably bad trade, and still, a trade that's getting worse despite Kerfoot's good play. But at least he is showing
his best.
Well, he's showing some versatility throughout the lineup, playing some center, playing some wing, accumulating 5-on-5 points, playing a penalty kill role. He's actually contributing. He's doing things. Michael Bunting leads the NHL in drawn penalties. Some of that is opportunity, but some of that is just the willingness of this player to take punishment at his size. And at less than $1 million a year, he is paying off. He is looking like the guy that he is. Camp, Kasha, obviously, we don't need to go over that. Those two have been brilliant. They have had their own identity as a third line for the first time in a long time.
For less than $3 million combined.
The Simmons contract, people doubt. They went 2 years for Wayne Simmons? This seems a little bit, why the second year? Just give him a veteran minimum. Who's offering him this contract? Where's he going to go? Wayne Simmons has looked completely rejuvenated.
Yep.
The blue line has started to coalesce. The Jack Campbell, if we're doing the Jack Campbell story, it's that, hey, Kyle Dubas traded for that guy, and he traded for that goaltender knowing that he had some term. That was part of the decision to go out and get him on that cheap contract. So the coach, that he brought in to be his right-hand man, the coach that he has always believed in, is getting this team so far to buy in to be something that they weren't supposed to be, which is a very, very strong defensive group. Nick Ritchie remains the biggest outlier, but I also kind of think that actually ties into the Dubas thing of, hey, they have a guy who's playing so poorly, and yet no one's really mad at Kyle Dubas. I think that tells you a lot about the way that this first quarter has gone for the Leafs general manager.
And also, like, what hit rate are you expecting on guys under $4 million, yeah. right? Like if you've got Kerfoot, Kampf, Kasha, Engvall, Bunting, Simmons, all as guys you're happy with, and we won't count Spezza because, again, that's the he wasn't going to sign anywhere other than here for that deal. But that's a lot of guys at the fringes.
Yep.
If you miss on one of those, and I know Richie makes a little bit more than those guys,
yeah,
that's fine. And I also think just to build off your Dubas point, Sandin's looked really good. And that's a guy that this organization has obviously been very high on. And, you know, when you see some of the moves or non-moves on the blue line, it's in part because he's coming. And at just 21, he looks like an NHL defenseman, legitimately.
One further point on what I think is the narrative of this season so far is last year they were a broken playoff team. They were hanging their heads. It was really difficult to watch as a fan. Everybody had lost faith, and to watch the All or Nothing documentary right before the season started kind of left that feeling in your stomach of, oh boy, are they going to be able to get over this? The beginning of the season, it felt like, like they haven't recovered from last year. But the fact that they've been able to kind of change that narrative, have some mental fortitude, put that in the past, maybe they're even playing with like a prove you attitude as lately. I mean, we talked about Mitch Marner having maybe his FU season. Mm-hmm. I think that is definitely something that's understated now when we feel comfortable with the Leafs being, you know, on a, what is it, 13 wins in the last 15 games or something. That's incredible considering how they started the season as well. And I think that deserves a little bit of discussion in the first quarter of the season rankings, because it could have been very easy to lose faith, to lose confidence, to have leaders start to do what the Vancouver Canucks are doing. And the fact that they were able to shift that narrative, grind it out, like we, even us on our show in the first couple of weeks, oh, here we go. I don't have faith. I'm not feeling like so comfortable with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And they definitely have proven a lot of people wrong. So
and I would hope that in the room, it's a little bit of like, hey, yo, you can have a couple bad games and it's not like you can turn it around. It doesn't mean that you're bad forever. I will say the fact that they turned it around after four consecutive losses is at least a little humorous that it was, four losses. Then you turn it around. Mm-hmm. But this has been a demonstrably different team since then. Did you guys see that? Sorry, just to follow up on the JT Miller thing from yesterday. Did you guys see the practice stuff yesterday that Thomas Drance of The Athletic was tweeting out? That apparently, like, they had to stop a 2-on-0 drill, and there was, like, loud overheard discussion that, like, even a 2-on-0 drill, they weren't on the same page and they couldn't get it figured out.
Guys, a 2-on-0 drill.
Yeah.
I can do that in my sleep.
Yeah. Since you left that place, I don't read that place. You're the last thing standing. So,
by the way, just in case anyone's curious why it hasn't come up or why we didn't dig in more on the Kerfoot thing, David Kampf practiced yesterday.
Oh, yay.
So, Kasha got an off day. Campbell got an off day ahead of Wall's start. So with Kasha getting the off day, Semyonov drew in, sorry, Ailish Clifford's still the 13th man, even in that
I
setup.
I love how that's like now who I am. No,
I thought it was going to be me because
I'm not shipping Clifford. I just thought it was fun.
He's from the old North Dumfries.
So
you can be your guy.
I find it fascinating that in the first quarter, and this could have even been the story, Ailish, though, is what you said is fan base was as low as I've ever seen it in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that there were times that were much lower, to be honest. And there are a lot of people who have real cautious optimism that I never would have thought would. My friends who did the thing where, not that I almost believed them, but I won't care the same.
Yeah.
People are coming back
I love the Leafs.
But that's the thing is, this does not feel fraudulent. And it didn't last year. So there is that caveat to this. But last year there was the overarching, hey, it's such a weird year and they're playing all the Canadian teams and what does this mean? And you were questioning it. to go out and play this way and to string together this many wins and to be doing it this way and then to not even have the offense clicking where you're looking at shooting percentages and variance and saying, wow, really, this team should be better than they are. They should be not only this defensive team, but one where they're packing way more of an offensive punch, that they have had Mrazek hurt, and you still feel good, that the depth does look impressive, that you're getting Mikheyev back, that Hosang's been in the AHL actually producing, that there's just more reasons to believe that they're going to be good, that they do have draft pick capital that they can move in a deal come deadline time to try and make things work. I'm surprised at the level of holy crap, we believe in this. If you're an outsider, you would look at that and say, haha, Leafs fans. If you've been with this team for forever, you know that it does feel like there's something different brewing here.
And yes, there's always going to be the element of seed in the playoffs. But we have 82 games here, which they need and we need to learn about them and things like that. And do you know the last time they had a points percentage this high? The last time their record was this good?
No,
but it's pre-salary cap. Got to be.
Not only pre-salary cap, it is literally never.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I'm surprised that they would have never had one.
Never, ever.
I mean, some of that is like you're getting into, oh, there weren't points for OT losses and stuff past. But still, even in the tie era, the highest they got was 679, and they're at 6.9 right now.
So,
Wow.
Nice.
I was waiting for it.
Last thing before we take the break, quickly. So, Joseph Woll gets the start tonight.
Joseph Woll.
He's a real Joseph Woll. He's not a Joe Woll.
No, yeah.
He's not a Joey Woll.
If he was Joey Woll, you'd have no faith in him, whatever. I know you don't like those. I know you don't like adults with the with the little kid version of their name.
It's true.
Joseph is all business.
Joseph
he's
is
in the he's here to F stuff up.
Yeah. If he was a fourth liner, I'd want Joe. I'd want Joe Woll.
Yeah, Joe Woll.
Bring in that
Joe.
Lunch pail. Uh-huh. Yeah. But no, Joseph Woll is all business.
He's full Joseph. So Joseph gets the start tonight against the Sharks.
It's so funny because literally yesterday we were like, do you think you'll see Joseph Woll? Oh, no way, unless there's an injury.
You know what, though?
I was surprised. Don't worry.
Once he's actually, if things go in the way that I'm going to try to paint this picture, then I think he will become Joe Woll. That it is a sign of you're one of us that they'll shorten the name. He's a stranger, so it's, hello, Joseph.
Nice to meet you.
Joseph, and he goes, my friends actually do call me Joe. It's like, oh, sorry, it was just written here. So I read out the whole name because I didn't want to offend you.
Oh, your friends call you Joe? Yeah. Does that mean we're friends?
Yeah, exactly. If he has a nice performance tonight, we're going to start tracking towards Joe Woll. I think he's sneaky important, and here's why. If you could get in a time machine, you could get rid of one contract from last offseason. It's not Nick Ritchie. It's Peter Mrazek. Mm-hmm. Seriously. I know people will think of that as that's nuts. Mrazek's making too much money for a guy that is someone who should be playing the role of backup, like real backup. And so far, the way the Leafs are playing, you don't really need a ton from your backup goaltender here. You can lean on a guy like Joseph Woll in spots like this and not be too upset about it. If he gets shelled tonight, you're going to go, hey, Mrazek, well, never mind that take I had about the time machine. We need you back in here, buddy, because we need those points and you want to finish high up the standings and all that different stuff. You want to feel good about.
And you want to be able to give Campbell random nights off that aren't back-to-back. Because, again, not a huge workload guy historically and leads the league in games right now.
Woll's first performance was pretty shaky against the Sabres, but the Leafs were really shaky against the Sabres in general. That was their last bad game. That's the last time the Leafs played poorly, and they still won. Then, the next one, Woll plays decent enough.
Shut up, baby.
But it's a game where, you looked at it and went, hey, did the Islanders have anybody that was threatening in the moments that they did he ever have to come up with a big save? Mm-hmm. If Woll can just be competent, if he can look like an actual NHL goaltender, this gives you the flexibility in the offseason to say, hey, we're going to try and trade Peter Mrazek. We're going to get off this contract. And someone will take that Peter Mrazek contract, right?
Well, at that point, it's only going to have 2 years of term, too, which, right.
2 years of term, cap goes up. He's still a competent goaltender. This is not a Peter Mrazek sucks. This isn't a Peter Mrazek.
No, we don't even know yet. We haven't seen him.
This is not.
Very true.
Only has to do with salary cap allocation. If you're going to bring back Jack Campbell, you're probably going to have to pay him as a starter if he continues to track this way. One way to make sure that that's okay is if you have a backup who's making the minimum, and that's Joseph Woll. Mm-hmm. And so if Joseph Woll can just be, we've talked about this a lot with the Toronto Maple Leafs and their salary cap situation. If you look at one of the problems with the team, one of the flaws with the team, what do you notice when you look at that roster, when you look at those lines, the forward group? There's nobody on a rookie contract. They've not been able to really supplement the big roster with guys who make rookie contracts. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's Sandin and Liljegren playing on the blue line, right?
Yeah.
That's it. Everybody else, the whole team, contracts, real contracts, into at least their second deals. The goaltender would be a nice spot where you could find a backup. The goaltender would be a nice spot where if Joseph Woll could be someone who's competent enough to play 20 games, one, it'd be nice that the organization finally developed a goaltender, something that we brought up multiple times, especially considering some of the guys that they passed on that draft. But just two would be the cap implications and knowing that you could move off of that Mrazek money and spread that wealth around and say, hey, we actually have some wiggle room here. We can not feel horrible about the Morgan Riley or about any of these contracts. By the way, that was the other part of Dubas I forgot to mention in the storyline of the first half is that he also moved off
Riley deal done.
Well, he just moved off of the own rental thing in season, and that was very nice as well. So it's big. It would be very, very big to have a goaltender who would be on his rookie contract for a couple of years and be competent. And it doesn't seem like a big thing because he seems like a placeholder for Mrazek, but if he can go in there and be decent, not just tonight, you're not judging off tonight, but over a little bit of a sample, big for the Leafs.
Huge.
Big like Joseph Woll.
Big like the A-list.
Joe.
Yeah. Joe.
We'll see after tonight.
We want you to become a Joe, Joseph. We want that.
But from not me. Just an average Joe.
You guys will wake up to a text from me tomorrow.
I'll take average Joe. Okay.
I will provide the update after the 10:30 game. I'm guessing both of you guys are watching on PVR.
We'll see.
But
I always say that, and then guess what happens? I watched the whole game.
Yeah, well, before the show came on, you were like, "Oh, Blake, it's a double game night. It's a Friday night."
Yeah,
just,
for you,
just PVR.
You said you couldn't nap today. I'm gonna take a nap. I'm gonna take my sweet Friday nap.
We'll establish. I know that the Leafs play Sunday night, so Monday's conversation will be a lot about that game. But we'll revisit this, which Woll he is. We'll also revisit the A-list.
Yeah, baby.
See what's on there today for a Friday edition. Continue Ailish's Ox Court as well.
Oh, yeah.
We're giving away Leaf tickets a little later, so stay tuned in for that.
So much good stuff today.
Yeah, and throw some texts our way, 590, 590. It's Friday. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So,
mini A-list.
Mini A-list.
Quick A-list. Let's do it.
Now, it's time for
A-list. Let us A.
Aww.
A.
The A-list.
A.
Not much last night, just because it was football heavy and no other sports are playing, but a couple little tidbits for you this morning. If you were wondering about how boring the Detroit Lions and Chicago Bears game was.
If you were wondering how boring was that game, Blake?
It was extremely boring, enough so that Blake even admitted on Tim and Friends that he could snooze through it.
Mm-hmm. Had a little bit of a nap.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Another Tim
my
and Friends
only nap of the week.
Guy,
if, my only nap of the week. If you guys wonder why I get grumpy later in the show,
we know.
I think the least Tim and Friends could do when they're stealing our bits is have on one of the people from the show.
So. The coin toss. Both teams tried to defer the coin toss.
The double defer.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was hilarious. It's kind of just an example of the first Lions highlight of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Neither team wants to play.
Yeah. Thought that was silly and stupid. And that's basically that game in a nutshell.
If you could find out that that was an option, well, they're like, we don't have to play. They're like, what?
Oh, perfect.
Like, yeah, no, we'll just all both decide that neither of us is going anywhere this year, and we just go home to our families. Oh, sounds good.
So this next part of the A-list, I'm hoping that we can get some texts in. Has to do with what your pandemic hobbies became, because Olympic diving champion Tom Daley, I don't know if you guys have seen his beloved knitting hobby. So he was at the Olympics. Uh-uh. He was knitting in the stands.
Uh-huh.
He's awesome. He's from Great Britain. He knitted this Team Great Britain cardigan while he was in the stands, and then he just became like this knitting sensation. he's launching his own knitting company made with love by Tom Daly, where he will
doesn't
be
knit the stuff.
Yeah. He will be giving you like knitting, like a little pack of everything you need to knit a sweater or knit or give it a gift it for someone for the holidays. And they're very fun. Like they're very fun, pattern. So if you want to gift someone a knitting package for the holidays, or if you want to get into knitting, you can do it with like a little bit of an Olympic touch. I actually tried to get into knitting during the pandemic. My mom knit me probably like 15 sweaters. Like it was crazy. She's like, oh, here's a pink one. Here's a hockey one. Like she knit me like Dartmouth hockey knit sweaters. Like she was going ham. And I was like, can't be that hard. It was awful.
So
I had arthritis within like a day.
First of all, when you're like, this guy's awesome, I don't think about a British guy who is diving for a living and likes to knit. I'm not like, yes, that guy does sound awesome.
He's one of the first like openly gay Olympians as well that came out. And that's
that makes him awesome?
Yeah, it does make him awesome. I think he's awesome.
So he, I don't really care that he knits or what his, you know, sexual proclivities are. I just am joking about how this guy, I'm like, these aren't exactly activities or a bio that I'd be like, oh, okay, you're an awesome dude who I want to hang out with. What I don't like about this is this guy's coming for the mom corner, as you just outlined. You just outlined where it's like, that's what you get from your moms and grandmothers and aunts is like poorly knitted things where you go, hey, this is what you get. Crappy socks, and now this guy's coming for that corner. Now it's like a niche thing
for you. You can buy the kit, and it's like,
oh, you buy a kit.
You buy a kit, and it's his patterns and it's his designs, and so like they're. I'm going to show you, and you're going to think they're stupid, but they're very fun and they're very cool. And like it's different than your grandmother knitting you like a cable knit sweater that doesn't have any flavor. His have a little bit of spunk, and so you buy the kit from him and his company, and then you can knit something. And if your kid is like a wannabe Olympian or an athlete, it's kind of cool that it has that type of connection.
It is kind of cool. He invented Lenz Mill, the store that already exists. But
anyway,
yeah, good for him. It's cool.
Sorry for finding something that brings me joy.
Oh my God.
I love knitting and I'm.
Wait, you don't like knitting.
You don't love knitting.
I tried. Whole point was I want people to text in what they tried to get into during the pandemic or did get into during the pandemic. Like I was so bored, I actually tried to get into knitting and it failed. And I have like balls of yarn in my apartment still that I'm
so
like,
basic.
I need to get rid of this.
Yeah, your cat's got to like that.
I just worked out more. That was it.
Okay, well, I also bought a Peloton and worked out more, but I, you know, was still bored. Like, I wanted to knit.
I know. I'm trying to think about, like, I tried to get into soccer. That didn't really work. I got in F1. I don't know. I can't think of an actual...
Sometimes I want to do something creative with myself, like I paint or draw or write.
I would like to buy one of your paintings, please.
Sure.
I read a lot.
So did I, but that also...
I drank too much.
Yeah, I drank a lot.
And, I mean, the only thing I really did differently, because I wasn't... Fortunately, I wasn't off or anything. Mm-hmm. So I still have my job to do.
Must be nice.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said fortunately.
Yeah, I still have my
grateful,
job, too.
I'm grateful for that. But no, I did dabble with a little bit of the fiction writing just to keep the creative juices going.
You did.
So, yeah, that was how I used some of the extra time.
I'm a huge fan of what I've learned about the two of you today.
See, I just wanted to use my brain more than just watching Tiger King and like just binging things on Netflix. I wanted to do something creative with my hands and just my brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can only take the foster dogs for so many walks, you know?
All right, you got one more?
No, that's it.
That was it?
Short little fry day list.
Short fry day list. We got a lot of fun guests today. We have a Leafs ticket giveaway later. We're still giving them away. I'm going to give you some more information on how you can win. It's my text. It's my text line. It is my text line, but it's also my aux cord. And Blake also might be getting a cat this weekend. So stay tuned.
Why are you jamming that in at the end of a block? You just reading my notes off the doc?
Oh my God.
Come on.
A great text.
Are you going to read it out or are we going to
I hope
break?
It's appropriate. But I said, what did you guys try to get into during the pandemic? I tried to get into my wife. Now we're having twins.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who's that signed by?
Nobody.
I mean, you didn't try. You succeeded.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Attaboy.
Way to go.